Our argument is Fernandez v. Clean House. Good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Alexander Hood. I'm from Towards Justice and an attorney for the appellants Maria Fernandez and Laura Chacon. At counsel's table is my colleague David Seligman. My clients worked for appellees Clean House and its agent Cesar Barita as house cleaners. Clean House misclassified all of its house cleaners, including my clients, as independent contractors instead of employees. This misclassification resulted in my clients not being paid all wages due to employees under federal and Colorado law. Most significantly, they were not paid overtime hours for hours worked in excess of 40 in a week. But the merits of these claims are not what this appeal is about. This appeal is about whether my clients' claims can be time-barred by the applicable statute of limitations at the motion-to-dismiss stage. For that, these are the relevant facts. The complaint was filed on August 24, 2016. The complaint states that Ms. Fernandez stopped working in February of 2014 and that Ms. Chacon stopped working in April of 2014. Therefore, my client's claims accrued between 2 and 3 years prior to the filing of the complaint. Under both the Fair Labor Standards Act and Colorado law, there are two statutes of limitations that apply to these claims. The first is a 2-year general statute of limitations, and the second is a 3-year statute of limitations if defendant's conduct is, quote, willful. Thus here, if the statute of limitations defense is appropriately raised, my client's claims, which accrued between 2 and 3 years prior to filing, are time barred unless defendant's conduct is willful. Below, the district court dismissed my client's claims on a motion to dismiss because the complaint alleged accrual happened between 2 and 3 years prior to filing, and this is important, that my clients failed to plausibly plead or plausibly allege willfulness in the complaint.
Is there anything you could have done to allege it better?
Well, we would claim that we have alleged it plausibly, but that we don't even need to go there, Your Honor, because it need not be pled at all as an affirmative defense.
I understand that, but is it just that you're so foreclosed from the facts on willfulness that you can't plead it better than what this complaint did?
I think that's part of it, Your Honor. I mean, part of what's going on here is that the only way to plead willfulness is through circumstantial evidence. That is, unless the defendant has somehow admitted to the willful conduct, and then you can plead some statement that admits the willful conduct. But here, I would suggest that the court too narrowly considered the complaint, and this is our secondary argument, but I'll start with it first. The facts alleged in the complaint show that the defendants misclassified the plaintiffs as independent contractors to avoid paying overtime, and it also alleges facts demonstrating that they are employees. And we would assert, Your Honor, that that is sufficient circumstantial evidence to show willfulness. And Judge Brimmer, in the District of Colorado, in an unreported decision, Van Perfleet v. Carpet Direct Corporation, which is cited in appellate's brief at page 15, on almost identical facts, said that alleging the claim in this fashion is also enough to allege willfulness under Twombly and Iqbal. But our position, Your Honor, is that we need not allege willfulness at all.
What did you allege that you think gets you within the statute? Just to say that they worked, they weren't paid adequately, these statutes apply. End of story? Are you assuming in that the employer should know the law, and so therefore by not following the law, the acts were willful?
No, Your Honor. I think the facts here, which are almost directly analogous to Van Perfleet, are that the employer misclassified to avoid paying overtime. And they don't have to know about the Fair Labor Standards Act, but they can know about some sort of legal or statutory obligation and that they're doing a thing to avoid it. That's reckless disregard.
Just have to allege that they were classified as independent contractors when they, in fact, were not.
To avoid paying overtime and...
And you said that, to avoid paying overtime. And you, please. You said that in your pleading.
We allege that they were misclassified and that they weren't paid overtime. And this is another critical point, which is also in Vanderfleet that Judge Brimmer recognized, that there are facts under the tests recognized by several courts that show that these are employees. In other words, they worked on an hourly basis. They were paid hourly. They didn't work for anybody else. In other words, it was reckless to believe that they were independent contractors rather than employees. But again, Your Honor, our principal argument, this is the argument, if you have to plead willfulness in the complaint, we did. But our principal argument is you don't have to plead willfulness in the complaint because it is an affirmative defense. The district court is wrongly turning the statute of limitations affirmative defense on its head. And we know that the implicit statute of limitations is an affirmative defense because the Tenth Circuit has said so. On Hoffson v. Humphreys, 454 F.2D 1279, the Tenth Circuit made clear that the implicit statute of limitations provision is, quote, intended as a limitation on the remedy available, not on the right to bring the action, and must be pleaded as an affirmative defense. As an affirmative defense under Rule 8, the burden is on defendants to allege it in their answer, not on plaintiffs to allege it doesn't apply in their complaint. It's backwards. Also, like any other affirmative defense, the defendants can waive it if they do not allege it. What's effectively going on here is that the district court and defendants are treating willfulness as an element of a Fair Labor Standards Act claim, and it just is not. This is consistent with other case law from other circuit and district courts cited at appellant's brief at pages 14 to 15, and I'd specifically point the court to the Ninth Circuit post-Twombly case in Rivera v. Perry and Sons Farms, Inc., 735 F.3D 892, where the Ninth Circuit said, at the pleading stage, a plaintiff need not allege willfulness with any specificity.
And that is because you can't get into the mind of the defendant without discovery?
I think that's a good policy reason behind it, but I think the principle here that we're basing this argument on is that you do not have to plead that affirmative defenses do not apply in a complaint. And that is the odd situation that the district court is putting plaintiffs in here. This is also consistent with Tenth Circuit law on what Iqbal and Twombly mean. I point the court to a 2017 Tenth Circuit decision, Safe Street Alliance, the Hickenlooper, 859 F.3D 865, where the Tenth Circuit said to determine whether or not a claim is plausible under Iqbal and Twombly, we look to the elements of the particular cause of action. The Tenth Circuit has said that statute of limitations is not an element, and therefore willfulness should not have to be pled at all, let alone with any level of specificity in the complaint. Again, we did plead willfulness in the complaint, and we do believe that we pled it with sufficient specificity, but we do not think the court need even go there. To illustrate the significance of the difference between the element of a claim and an affirmative defense, I take it out of the Fair Labor Standards Act context and consider a complaint that plausibly alleges, one, the existence of a contract, and two, a breach of that contract, but says nothing about when the claim accrued. That complaint is not subject to dismissal because it plausibly alleges all of the elements of a breach of contract claim. The district court is putting the plaintiffs in an odd position here where because they mention dates in their complaint, suddenly they're forced into plausibly alleging willfulness.
Well, wait, that's not so terrible. You can move to dismiss a complaint as barred by the statute of limitations if, in fact, the complaint, for whatever reason, includes dates. If there weren't the extra year for willfulness, this motion to dismiss would be perfectly appropriate, would it not?
We do not quibble with that proposition, Your Honor. And the Tenth Circuit announced that proposition or that rule in Aldrich v. McCullough, Inc., 627 F.2D 1036, where the Tenth Circuit said dismissal is appropriate when dates given in the complaint make clear that the right sued upon has been extinguished. The dates are admissions in a complaint. So if they admit that the complaint is time-barred, that's fine. But willfulness is, it's saying something is willful in a complaint is anything but admitting the statute of limitations bar applies. The district court, in essence, is flipping it on its head, Your Honor. Simply, the Aldrich rationale does not hold here. My clients allege their claims accrued less than 3 years ago and that defendant's conduct was willful. That is enough because, again, willful conduct is not an element. And under Aldrich, willfulness is anything but clear here. It can't be considered an admission that the conduct is not willful simply because we did not plausibly plead willfulness. Again, I'd like to distinguish between an element and an affirmative defense in that if defendants say did not raise willfulness in their answer or did not raise statute of limitations as an affirmative defense in their answer, plaintiffs would never have to prove willfulness at all, unlike the elements of their claim, which they would always have to prove at trial. Rather than on a motion to dismiss, my clients propose that the time for testing willfulness is on summary judgment or at trial. Other than Colson and Topp, all of the cases on willfulness cited by defendants are decided on summary judgment. That's how it should work. Plaintiffs should allege the elements of their FLISA claim. Defendants should assert statute of limitations as an affirmative defense. Then, after discovery, defendants can move for summary judgment on any FLISA claims that accrued between 2 and 3 years prior to the filing of the complaint. Plaintiffs will then have to come forward with evidence of willfulness at that time, or their claims between 2 and 3 years will be dismissed. We will submit the motion to amend argument on the pleadings unless you have any questions regarding that issue.
Well, just one.
Sure.
What, in addition, would you have added if you would have been permitted to amend?
Your Honor, we would have, I think, made more clear that the action itself, misclassifying, was willful. That it's circumstantial evidence of the willful conduct.
Even though you've just argued that you don't need to assert that or prove that at this point.
Well, the court didn't consider that, Your Honor, and we could add more allegations there. But again, we think, A, we didn't need to plead it at all, and two, even if we were, even if we had to plead it, we did. But the principal argument regarding the motion to amend, Your Honor, is simply that the court didn't provide any rationale for not allowing the amendment and didn't follow Minter v. Prime Equipment 451F.3D1196 in saying that there was undue delay, bad faith, or some sort of prejudice to the defendants. But again, I think we need not get to that argument.
What sorts of new allegations could you add? You say you could have added new allegations. Like what?
Your Honor, we would submit that in a motion to amend, and that's where it should be properly considered. But again, that's not in the record before the court, and I think that the court had to make findings consistent with Minter in order to not allow amendment, and those are the findings that we're missing here. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Teresa Wilkins on behalf of defendants appellees Clean House and Cesar Borrega. Wanted to address a couple of opposing counsel's arguments first. I think it's very important to note that he's not able to answer your question because there are no additional facts to plead. They did not plead any specific facts alleging willfulness in the original complaint.
Do they need to state a claim under FLSA or the...
I'm sorry, could you...
Do they need to plead willfulness to state a claim under FLSA?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe they do. Plaintiffs are required to state in their complaint enough allegations of fact to state a claim, and that does not preclude them asserting a claim of willfulness. It's their burden...
If they're saying... here's the factual background. We worked for these people. These were the hours we worked. This was the pay we were given. and at the end of the day, this is a violation of FLSA.
That does not prove willfulness. Willfulness is knowing or in reckless disregard.
But is that an element of proving violation of FLSA?
I believe it's one of the elements they need to prove if they want to extend the statute of limitations.
And
otherwise, plaintiffs are going to put into their complaint, it's willful, and every single FLSA claim is going to be a 3-year statute of limitations.
No. You can still get to summary judgment and all.
Right, after expending significant time and money.
It seems to me the rules of civil procedure resolve this. Statute of limitations is an affirmative defense. That's in the rules. You do not have to anticipate responses to affirmative defenses in your complaint, number one. So they don't have to allege anything about willfulness in the complaint. Second, Rule 9B says you don't have to allege, you can allege willfulness with generality. 9B says, in alleging fraud or mistake, a party must state with particularity the circumstances constituting fraud or mistake. Malice, intent, knowledge, and other conditions of a person's mind may be alleged generally. The only reason you can sometimes get a dismissal based on statute of limitations ground based on a complaint, as counsel put it, and I think it's an accurate way of putting it, is if the complaint admits certain things took place at a certain time, then the defendant can say, given those admissions in the complaint, we're entitled to dismiss on statute of limitations grounds. I mean, you've read the Rivera opinion. Tell me what's wrong with Rivera.
Your Honor, I would argue that it's not only a state of mind, it is, and it was cited by plaintiffs in their brief. I don't remember if it was the original brief or the reply. The Bowdoin case, it was an order out of the District of Colorado, and willfulness is a mixed question of law and fact, but factual issues predominate. So I think that the facts need to be pled in order to move forward, because if you don't have a factual basis, then how do you prove your claim?
Well, then you go to summary judgment on affirmative defenses, and you say, what is your evidence of willfulness? You don't have any, you lose. But that's the next step. Not everything can be decided on the complaint. I hear you. You don't want to have to go through, I mean, you'll get paid fine, but your client doesn't want to pay for it.
Right. What's the remedy for my client?
Yes. Yes. And sometimes there aren't. Sometimes you just have to put on evidence and or require them to put on evidence. And maybe it'll be pretty easy. Maybe it's interrogatory saying, what is your evidence of willfulness here? And then the judge can say that evidence is not sufficient to support a reasonable person's finding of willfulness. But I'm not quite sure why you say willfulness is not state of mind. I thought that's exactly what it is. There's still legal and factual issues. The factual issues are, what's the evidence of willfulness? And the legal issue is that evidence sufficient for a reasonable person to infer willfulness?
I think it's a combination of state of mind and the facts to support the claim. But as it was stated in the district court order, I think the factual issues predominate. And I think the cases that have ruled on these issues coming out of the District of Colorado are following that. The Smith versus Pizza Hut case was on a motion to dismiss the second amended complaint, and that's when they decided whether or not they had sufficient facts to proceed with the claim. In that case, they did.
Well, but malice, intent, knowledge, other things are also, I don't see how to distinguish those. They require facts. There's a reason why the rules don't require you to allow you to plead those things with generality, in part because there's some discovery necessary. And that's how you're going to find out what's in the other person's mind ordinarily. They do have constraints in alleging fraud or mistake. And you may not like the rules. Maybe now the rules should say you have to plead state of mind with particularity and give the factual allegations that would support it. And maybe you'll succeed in changing the rules.
I think you're equating willfulness with state of mind, though, and it's not just state of mind. That's my argument. Opposing counsel also stated, cited the Aldrich case, and specifically it says in the Aldrich case, although a statute of limitations bars an affirmative defense, it may be resolved on a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss when the dates given in the complaint make clear that the rights sued upon have been extinguished. So how do we distinguish between, okay, even though the two-year statute of limitations, there's a bar to that, why isn't there a bar to the three-year statute of limitations? Why can't we get rid of those cases early so that parties don't have to go through litigation and discovery, summary judgment motions, in order to get to the same result? And it was also cited in the, I believe it was the Twombly case, when the allegations in a complaint, however true, could not raise a claim of entitlement to relief, this basic deficiency should be exposed at the point of minimum expenditure of time and money by the parties in the court. And I think that supports my argument in that why would we allow cases to go through the litigation process if we can resolve them early as the district courts are doing by practice now.
But again, in Twombly, you're talking about the elements of the claim. And once you go beyond that and you're going to dismiss based on affirmative defense, it needs to be that there are admissions in the complaint that require a finding in your favor on the affirmative defense. It's not an admission that this wasn't willful to just allege willfulness. I don't see how that can be an admission that it wasn't willful. And your Twombly requirement is requiring the plaintiff to plead things that aren't elements of the offenses. I think Judge Briscoe was asking about.
Okay.
There's a problem. If it had been more than 3 years, then you wouldn't care. They could argue, they could assert willfulness however they wanted, and you could prove your affirmative defense.
Well, I think if it was under 2 years, they could do that as well, because they wouldn't need to plead it to get the 3-year statute of limitations. So in this case, we're looking for a finding that says plaintiffs who file complaints with FLSA claims outside of the 2-year statute of limitations, but before the 3-year statute of limitations must plead facts in support of their claims for willfulness in order to survive the Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss. It's not like the plaintiffs don't have a remedy. The remedy is file before the 2-year statute of limitations. If you're not sure if you have facts to support a willfulness claim, then file before the 2 years. If you want to take the chance, then you go forward. But I think that puts the burden on the parties trying to defend it. It puts the burden on the court having a case before it that it's ultimately going to dismiss anyway.
If the employees involved here were employees under the Act and not independent contractors, then would you concede that it would be time and a half or hours over 40?
If we're conceding that they were employees and not independent contractors?
Yes.
I hadn't thought about that, Your Honor. I can't address that one.
Well, if it's so, and we'll come back to that, certainly the complaint, the amended complaint, has a number of fairly detailed allegations about independent contractor versus employee. The control that is exercised by the employer, as you wouldn't normally expect with an independent contractor. Not to recite them all, but it was the employer who set the pay, the work schedule, had substantial control, discipline if late or work improperly, do not work for other companies, no specific duration set for how long the people would work for the company, no specified, specific, unique skills offered by the employees, things that we look more toward for independent contractor purposes. And so I guess my question is, why isn't that good enough, and what do you want? What do you think would suffice?
I think those are allegations to prove they were employees and not independent contractors. If I go back and look at the answer that we filed to the first amended complaint on the remaining plaintiff, my client denied those allegations because it was sent up as an independent contractor agreement, and I do say agreement. Both parties agreed to it. My client operates as essentially a general contractor subbing out to independent contractors. These plaintiffs had their own independent businesses and ran those businesses on their own. They were not, the terms were not dictated, the hours were not dictated by my client. So all of that is denied. And I'm sorry, what was the last part of your question?
I think that you've covered what I asked. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think the other answer to your question is willfulness is in the context of the FLSA is defined as knowing or in reckless disregard, and you have to get beyond the facts that they allege, showing that my client knowing and intentionally violated the FLSA.
Well, that's when you're actually getting to the point of whether or not your client would be liable under the Act. Here we're at the pleading stage, and I think, as Judge Hartz has indicated in visiting with you, that the rules, Rule 8 and Rule 9 of the Code of Civil Procedure permits notice pleadings and also speaks to affirmative defenses. And I think when all of that is read together, I question your concept that willfulness has to be shown in the complaint when we have notice pleading under Rule 8.
And I think the reason for that, Your Honor, is to distinguish between the two-year and the three-year statute of limitations. There's no point in having two different statute of limitations at that point.
Do you agree that the statute of limitations is an affirmative defense?
I agree that it is an affirmative defense, but as stated in Aldrich, you can use a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss if the facts are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just to touch on a couple more issues in the last of my remaining time. We also believe the district court did not abuse his discretion in dismissing plaintiffs from the action with prejudice. Again, no facts were alleged in either the original complaint or the amended complaint to support the claim of willfulness, and the plaintiffs requested to be dismissed with prejudice, so they can't argue that what they requested and what they were granted is now in error. Additionally, the district court did not abuse his discretion in denying the plaintiff's request to amend. No motion was filed pursuant to Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 15A2. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Just briefly, Your Honors. In response to the sort of efficiency considerations that opposing counsel raised about the cost of getting the summary judgment, I would submit that summary judgment does not have to be that big of a deal. A summary judgment can be submitted at any time. You can submit multiple motions for summary judgment, and the district court judge has discretion to limit discovery for the purposes of a single motion for summary judgment on willfulness. Moreover, under Rule 12, a motion to dismiss can be converted to a motion for summary judgment and considered after appropriate notice is given to the parties. So there are tools here for the district court judge to do this efficiency, but still give plaintiffs the opportunity to appropriately plead willfulness. And finally, Judge Phillips, just to your point, I just want to be clear that I think, as you were pointing out, there's no reason that allegations regarding liability cannot be also considered allegations regarding willfulness, especially when you take all of the allegations as true and all inferences are taken in plaintiff's favor, as a district court must on a motion to dismiss. And unless you have any other questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning, and the case is submitted. We will take a 10-minute break at this time. When we return,